Welcome back to Discourse, the weekly occult and esoteric podcast hosted by myself, Abamon the Great, and Dr. Anna Stone. This week, Dr. Stone takes the lead as she discusses her research into the link between trauma, mediumship, psychic abilities, and its relationship to trauma initiation, bringing up eye-opening insights into occult practice, proto-religion, and paranormal experiences. Breathe in, young magus, and let the work begin. One. Okay, welcome back to Discourse with myself, Abamon the Great, joined as always by the lovely Dr. Anna Stone.
Hello.
And this week we're going to be discussing something that you are actually quite the expert in. You wrote your dissertation on it. It's the link between trauma, psychic abilities, and shamanic initiation, and how all these things kind of intertwine with each other.
Yeah. Yes, they do. They're correlated with one another, not always, but more often than not.
Yeah, it's actually pretty interesting because this relationship was never on my radar before in the occult until I met you, and you were so interested in it and passionate about it, and you sent me a few of your papers that you had written on the subject, and I read them, and it kind of exposed me. I had never really explored mediums in general before. And it exposed me to this link, but I am extremely fascinated with initiation, and it was a missing piece of the puzzle for me with what happens in occult initiation. However, through my exposure to this idea that you have about childhood trauma and traumatic experiences in general, and how people that report mediumship abilities and psychic abilities usually have some type of trauma in their childhood, I was able to start recognizing the mediums in my life, because mediums in general don't like to talk about it.
No.
Because they're afraid to.
Yeah, this is true.
Yeah.
Most of us will not come right out and say it, and it was really hard for me to be able to get to that point. It's still hard. I don't like saying it. I don't like the term for some reason. I don't know why. And I think that has to do with trauma, actually, because a lot of people that experience moderate to severe trauma in their childhoods usually did so at the hands of their caregiver, right? Caregivers. And those are people that are supposed to be all, you know, loving you and taking care of you and nurturing you. But most of us heard a lot of negativity coming from them about us, right? Any kind of, you know, thought of kind of boasting about oneself or, you know, bragging or anything like that, you know, I'm just very highly sensitive to that. That's why I don't like to, you know, really celebrate things I do, you know, how I am. I'm not really that much into the attention that comes from the things that I've accomplished at all. And that's definitely stemming from the need to feel small.
Yeah.
And not, you know, be a braggart, as my mother would have put it.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't like to do that, to boast about anything. And I feel, and I've talked to a lot of other people that also feel the same, where it, you know, when we think of somebody that has psychic abilities, that's like special, you know? And so if I say that I have that ability, then I'm saying I'm special, and that feels wrong.
I think it's special for people that don't have it, but something I've noticed about you and since then the other mediums that I've met and ran into, they don't view it as special. They view it as kind of a nuisance almost. Yeah.
that's putting it nicely. It is not fun most of the time. It's not ever fun, actually. I don't think I've ever enjoyed it. It's just been something that's happened my whole life. And a lot of us, I think when we're younger, we don't even know that other people don't experience the same things until we do. And that's usually pretty early on. And then all of a sudden we have to put a mask on and not talk about those things, and for fear of being ridiculed or called crazy or, you know, bullied. But it always somehow slips out. You know, people know that you're weird, right?
Yeah.
And there is a correlation to the, so traumas. So if any of you guys, let me start with this. If any of you out there have kind of, you know, always been on the outside of your friend group, not really in the middle of things, like kind of the outlier of the group, kind of being pushed out at work maybe, or like, you know, just not with the in crowd, so to speak. Not that who would want to be with them anyway, but, you know, like if you've had a kind of life of being on the outside looking in, there's a reason for that. If you're a person that has had people in your life just not like you, just for no reason, literally, you know, you haven't done anything to them, they just don't like you, and it's obvious, there's a reason for that.
Yeah, it's weird. It seems that it tends to magnetize a certain type of toxic person.
Right.
Like, it seems like people get obsessed.
So they're, yeah. So you're hitting the other side of the coin.
Yeah.
So the reality is that undergoing or experiencing traumatic events early on actually causes a change in your genetic signature. Your physiology responds to the trauma in a way that actually rewrites the genetic code of your DNA.
Yeah.
And here's the crazy part is that we all, you know, everyone always says everything's vibrations, you know, and the all empty space, 98% empty space or something. Well, we all vibrate at a certain frequency, and normal people vibrate at the same frequency. Okay.
What's people normal?
The average.
Yeah.
Just the average person that's
like,
you know.
We were talking about this the other day. Yeah. I think normal is a bureaucrat. I think that's right. The entire idea behind it.
So in terms of psychology,
yeah,
because that's what I know about.
Yeah,
normal is based on a group of individuals from Minnesota.
Yeah,
in the middle of nowhere that were asked questions about societal norms and morals and things like that back in the 50s, I believe.
Yeah.
And we're still using that as the measure today. It's the MMPI-2 test, the Minnesota Multifaceted Personality Inventory. And it's a second version. It's very accurate.
Yeah.
I've taken it and, you know, because it was ordered. And then also because just when I started to study psychology, I took it for one of my classes on assessments. Anyhow, normal would be somebody that goes with the main, you know, ideas.
Uh-huh.
Fits in.
I don't think those people are normal.
Well, I'm telling you what psychology and what the norm is that you don't raise a ruckus, you don't ruffle feathers, you follow the rules, you follow the law.
So that's not normal to me.
So yeah, I understand. Yeah. Trust me, I do.
I don't know if I know any of those people.
Oh, yes, you do. Of course you do. So these are the people that don't question why we're here.
I've met one person
after
like
I told
that.
You about
one person in my entire life, and my mind was blown. They were like an alien to me. I was like, what are you talking about? You've never thought about what
see because
what else is out there?
Well, I've got a few years on you, right? I didn't start noticing it until I was probably about 30, and then I started to really notice it. As soon as you notice it, it starts to become more prevalent. But the thing is there's a lot of people out there that just, they go to work, they come home, they do the things with their kids, they wash, rinse, repeat over and over again.
Yeah, but you don't know what their inner world is like. They could be a very deep thinker or a very neurodivergent thinker.
I'm saying no. I'm going to say no.
They're just,
if we're talking normal, normal people don't question authority. Normal people don't, in terms of what is deemed normal for psychological assessment, okay?
Yeah.
There are people that are willing to follow the status quo and not rebel so much, you know, fit in, conform.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's probably any of the people that view our show at all. And definitely not
me. If you're watching an occult esoteric podcast, you're not part of that gang. But right. So I think there's this issue with psychology, right?
Yes.
So one of the things that we see with developed like legal science, right? Like a developed legal system, and our government is so good at making laws and ordinances and tiny little things that we've gotten to the point in the 200 years since the development of our legal system that the average person commits three crimes every single day and they're completely unaware of it.
Sure.
So I'm kind of pointing at the fact that psychology has gotten so out of control with adding different labels and categorizing people and mistaking the map for the territory that there's not a single person that can walk into a office anymore and not walk out with a diagnosis for just having an odd belief or going through a normal life experience.
So let me, I'm going to say.
So I don't believe in
no,
that.
No, I understand what you mean. And as a person with a doctorate in psychology and a master's in psychology, I can tell you right now that most of it is absolute nonsense, that it is not a hard science. It is an interpretation based on the practitioner. You could go into three different therapists and give the exact same symptoms and get three different diagnoses. Very standard procedure. It's happened to me many times. On top of that, they prescribe medications that are made for the disorders that they create for the manual.
Yeah.
So, and that's facts. So, you know, and it was really shattering to me when I discovered that in my PhD, in my programs. Like, I didn't know how bad it was.
Yeah.
However, with the trauma thing, and it's only very recent that trauma's even been studied at all.
Yeah.
It wasn't until the 1990s when the ACEs questionnaire, self-inventory questionnaire, that 10 question, you know, questionnaire about what kind of experiences you've had as a child. And it lists, you know, did you see your parents get divorced? Was there violence in the home? Was there any time that you didn't have enough food in the house? Were you ever yelled at and called names? You know, were you ever beaten? Was a parent ever taken to prison or jail? Did you have a parent that was abusing alcohol or drugs? You know, all of those things. And, you know, anything over a 4, if you answer yes to 4 of those questions, you are clinical at that point.
Yeah.
And, you know, so my score is 10.
Yeah.
I checked all the, and I didn't want to. Like, of course, nobody wants to, but it does explain a lot. So with the DNA thing that I was mentioning earlier, the genetic code gets rewritten and it changes the vibrational frequency of the DNA. If you've ever seen an actual video of, you know, or a recreation of what it would look like if we could see it in real time, you know, Harvard has a really good animation on that. It's by this animator, Drew Barry, and it's amazing. Amazing Molecular Machines is the name of the video. Uh-huh. Show it to my biology students every year I teach it because it's the one thing that gets them interested because it's so creepy.
Yeah.
But it shows that, you know, it's constantly just vibrating, wiggling around. So normal people, let's just say for the sake of argument, like for this conversation, that normal means people that haven't been grossly neglected, abused, or mistreated in childhood.
Yeah, so
okay?
People who aren't traumatized.
People that are not traumatized. And that is 2/3 of the population, apparently.
Yeah. I consider myself one of those people.
Two-thirds of the population do not know what we're talking about right now at all. Like, they don't relate to it, and I'm so happy for them, right? I'm sure it's a lovely existence to not have to have those things happen. But for the third of us that did, our DNA was changed because of those events.
Yeah.
Especially if it's repeated, if it's complex trauma. So there's PTSD. Trauma can create a couple things. It can create, you know, some anxiety about a thing that happened one time, and you can grow out of that. It can create PTSD, which is a severe anxiety response to an event that happened once. Now, once could mean war, as in the duration of time you were in war, but that's still considered a one-off event, right? Complex trauma is a lot worse and a lot different. It's reserved for people that were trafficked, either for labor or for other purposes. It is also, you know, people that were kidnapped and held captive, prisoners of war, domestic violence survivors that are trapped in a home with an abuser and can't escape. So it's basically like somebody that's been traumatized by somebody that has power over them and they have no hope of escape. And so that creates a different level of trauma in a person that it permeates every single aspect of their life. And a lot of us don't like to ever admit that. Like, a lot of us are like, you know, nah, man, I'm fine. You know, that which doesn't kill me makes me stronger, kind of vibe. Because that's what we have to. What's the other option? So it changes us at the molecular level. And this is documented science. There's hundreds of studies about this. And the thing is that the people that are not traumatized can sense something's different about you. Mm-hmm. But unless they're very intuitive, and it just, and even if they are, it's very unlikely that they would be able to pinpoint what it is that they're feeling about you. But the reason they don't like you, the reason they don't want to include you, is because they know you're off. What off means in this sense is that different, that you're different from them. And they can't figure out why they don't like you. They just know, because we don't, as a species, we don't like different. We like people like us. We like similar, right? So when something feels off about somebody, it's off-putting to a lot of people. And a lot of people don't take the time to go, why is it that I don't like this person? And to really reflect on why that might be. And they probably couldn't have anyways until recently when we discovered this, that your genetic vibration is different from when you experience trauma. And then on top of that, it causes neurodivergence, right? So because when you're young and your brain's in the formative years and your neurons are pruning and pruning down, ours don't. We don't have that process happening because our need for survival is so great that the other energy reserves that are needed to do these other functions, during adolescence and stuff, don't happen. That's why you see a lot of people with stunted emotional growth, and they get trapped in an age where trauma happened.
Yes.
And you can see that in adulthood where you respond poorly to things that you otherwise shouldn't. When you act like a child when you don't get your way, when you act like a child when you're upset and you can't, be mature about it because you literally can't because you're trapped, right? So it actually rewrites our DNA. It makes us different, literally and figuratively, from everybody else. And that's how we know each other, too. That's how you can tell. Like today in class, my new cohort of students I'm teaching, I did that exercise, two truths and a lie, mm-hmm. right? And my two truths were, I worked at DARPA on telepathic soldier communications. Mm-hmm. I knew they weren't going to believe that. Mm-hmm. And the second one was that I, got my bachelor's, my three masters and a PhD in just under 8 years, right? I mm-hmm. knew they weren't going to believe that either. And then my third one was that I had a great childhood. My life has been super charmed and easy, and I have been successful since high school. Mm-hmm. And everyone picked the other two, mm-hmm. except for these three people in class. And I saw them look at me and they're like, nah, she's traumatized. Mm-hmm. And I was like, And when I looked at them, I noticed it on them too. And I took a moment to actually ask them, and all three confirmed that, yes, they have experienced severe childhood trauma. Mm-hmm. And I was like, there you go. We can see each other. And it's true. You can. You recognize a kindred spirit when you meet one, typically speaking. However, there's two branches of people that are traumatized. They're the people that are the victim, and they will continue to be such, and their life will continue to be a nightmare wreck because they see themselves, they've identified with it as that, in that way. And therefore, it continues to come to them. And they live so far in the past, ruminating on everything and all the people that did them wrong, that those people are still, in fact, in control of their lives, despite being separated from them for however many years. Because mm-hmm. when you live constantly and ruminating in the past, you're not living in the present, and you're letting those people still win, right? So, and then there's the other branch of people that are like, okay, we probably did that for a while until we got sick of it and realized that we were our own worst enemy at this point, and bad things happen to everybody. And it's how you frame it that's really important. And you can frame it as a victim, or you can frame it as something that you survived and you got past, and you're going to use the beneficial aspects of it to further your growth. And that is the preferred path. And that is what occurs in indigenous tribes, right? With shaman. Shaman are purposely traumatized. Purposely. So the things that happen to us in the West, the rough initiations, the unmonitored, the uncontained encounters with mortality, are, not guided by elders. They're not planned. They're not, we don't know when they're going to end. We don't know what they're going to entail. And we just have to deal with it. Okay. But in indigenous cultures, that's not the case. These people are recognized at birth or shortly after, and they are primed for it. and they're prepared for it and they know it's going to happen, you know? Yeah. Sometimes, now that's if it's a hereditary one, or if it's something like they're born with a cull, you know, like a veil, that's a sign of being psychic, you know, if you have the amniotic sac over the head.
Yeah.
But there's the other type, which is the spontaneous initiation of trauma, which is typically an illness or near-death experience or some very severe trauma that comes out of nowhere. But most often than not, it's an illness, and that could be mental or physical, right?
Yes.
And the sign of a person being worthy of being the shaman or the shamaness would be that they heal themselves from it.
Yeah.
What does that mean? That means that they were losing their mind, and then they somehow figured it out. They had some moment of spiritual clarity where they understood what was going on, and they transmuted it, and they're now okay, and they can now help others if that experience similar, right? Here in the US and in the modernized world, we give people medication for that mm-hmm. and tell them to be quiet.
Yeah.
We don't allow for that to play out that way, and the narrative is completely different. So the outcome is completely different.
Well, yeah, spiritual problems require spiritual solutions, you know, and that's what the format of an initiation is, right?
Yes.
So it's like not every bad thing that happens to you is an initiation. No. Not every trauma that happens to you is an initiation. It's not a spiritual thing. But being able to like recognize, you know, the adverse childhood experiences, there's something that happens to the brain that restructure basically breaks it.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And that's what lends that kind of ability for mediumship, right?
Well, it's a very complex situation here, because that was originally the take, that it's something that breaks you open. You have a trauma and it's so bad, like especially with, you know, inappropriate relations, okay? Yeah. With, you know, relatives or whatever it is, that kind of trauma is the most prevalent for psychic ability for some reason. And I think originally I was like, okay, I could see why, because most of us dissociated because the trauma our body was going through at the time was too great. So our brain kind of fractures or splits off and we are somewhere else mentally, physically still there, mentally out. Us leaving our bodies that way allowed us, you know, allowed for other energies to interact with us because we're like out, right? And vulnerable. That was the original take on it. However, in very recently in 2021, the Institute of Noetic Sciences did a study on people with mediumship abilities and psychic abilities. And they found something completely unexpected when they compared the DNA of people with psychic ability to people without psychic ability. And that is that they all both psychic and non-psychic people have the exact same gene. But the non-psychic people have a mutation of the gene. So at some point in adolescence, before teenager time occurs, so before 13, right? About 8 to 11, around there, this gene is activated in most people. It's mutated and it turns on. And that seems to be the difference between the two groups. That's the only difference genetically.
Yeah.
So while, of course, more research is needed into that, but it's opening up the possibility that this could be something that everybody has, but when you don't need it, it just gets turned off because it expends so much energy for the person.
Well, it makes a lot of sense, because if we're talking about this kind of precognitive ability and this ability to take in subtle information, and maybe subtle information that's a few moments ahead, right? If you're talking about that ability, I mean, who's going to need that ability the most? It's, you know, in a primitive society, it would be women and children, right?
Okay, absolutely.
And children especially, you know, children are completely dependent on their adults. And if their adults are the ones that are not protecting them, right. then they especially need that faculty.
That is correct. That is the that has been the prevailing theory for a long time, that it is a survival mechanism. It's a function of evolution. It was always with us. It was stronger back when we were hunter-gatherers because we didn't, or before language, because we didn't have language to communicate. So we had instead this instinct, these gut feelings, this knowing of like where the saber-toothed tiger was, you know, where the poisonous snakes were, whatever it is. The problem is that, you know, well, not the problem, but over time with modernization and agriculture and things like that coming in and, you know, civilization becoming a thing where we had cities and, you know, areas of, you know, commerce, we weren't needing to do those activities anymore that were so dangerous. And so those abilities kind of just, you know, slowly dissipated. I mean, they didn't go away, but they got less and less prevalent in the population. Then you add to that with the Catholic Church taking over, or you know, the church coming into play and starting to go through and, you know,
get rid of the oracles.
Right.
Yeah.
If you are a parent and your child starts behaving or having signs of being psychic, you are going to tell them with all of your seriousness, like, you are going to not ever talk about this, and you are not going to, this is not real. And you're going to tell them it's their imagination, it's not real, so that they won't get burnt at the stake, hung, stoned, whatever it is. So there's a multitude of factors that are likely the cause of it dissipating within the population, but still it's 2% of the population is psychic, you know, and this is like widely accepted now. So that's the crazy part, is that science widely accepts that. They can't identify what psychic really means.
Yeah.
Other than
like magic, right?
Well,
like,
I actually, what is it? That's not true. I actually, I misspoke, because I just found an article when we were, before we came on, I found this new research article, and I will tell you who wrote it, and it is what journal it's in. It is such tiny print. God dang it. Brain to brain communication, the possible role of brain electromagnetic fields. And it is the first sentence says, brain to brain communication, posted as one of the multiple kinds of telepathy, is the direct conveyance of feelings from one animal to another without using common sensory channels of communication. And then it goes on to say that science has identified this occurring between humans and animals and humans to human. So, and then there's a whole bunch of studies cited here. So there's, and this is published from this year. It's this year, and it's from the University of Iran. So, which is interesting. So there's research that shows that people can communicate without communicating.
Yeah.
The traditional ways. And there's research to show that that still that science accepts that it's a thing. They just can't identify exactly what it is or how to measure it, okay?
Yeah.
Which we already know. So this is, you know, it's not like in question anymore. It's just, how do we prove it now, you know? So it's one of those things that is, and it's, you know, it's had to be hidden for a long time. And then on top of that, because we are indoctrinated from birth to say it's our imagination and it's not real, most of us gaslight ourselves about it too.
Yeah.
I mean, I did.
So there's...
For years. I still do.
Yeah. I had a hypnotherapy client, I think last week or 2 weeks ago. And the way that she was talking, she was very reserved. Mm-hmm. And the way that she was talking about a lot of the same experiences you're talking about being... and a little bit of an outsider in that kind of, like, the story is something that I'm getting really familiar with ever since meeting you. And I had a little hunch. And so I just outright asked her, you know, do you hear things sometimes? Is there a voice that tells you to avoid stuff, you know? And you could see this like wave of relief come over her because she's trying to talk about it without outright
about
saying it. Oh. And she just immediately started talking about her experiences, and she's middle-aged right now, and she is just kind of like coming back to terms with it. But she said that, she told me she grew up in rural Texas, and, you know, if you've ever been to rural Texas, it's a lot of the hellfire, brimstone kind of Christians, very intolerant people, you know?
Yes.
And she told me, she's like, I learned really quick. She was like, I was about 7 years old when I learned, like, never talk about this, yeah, and you just pretend like it doesn't exist, yeah, you know?
Absolutely, yeah, you do, because, you know, whenever, you know, my mom was also psychic, is also psychic. And I watched her as a kid have, so my grandfather died in the house when I was 8. He had cancer and he was very sick for a really long time, and he was in a hospice care and all that. And the night he died, I remember she was in the kitchen and she was real frantic. So she was a very unstable person. She's bipolar, undiagnosed at the time. And so we just didn't know what was wrong with her. We just knew she was highly volatile.
Yeah.
But this night she was exceptionally histrionic, like very just wired up, right? And she was standing at the stove stirring this ceramic bowl of Jell-O pudding, like, and somebody asked her what she was doing, and she's like, I gotta feed the kids before he, I just have to feed the kids, I know I need to feed the kids. And she kept saying it like that, like frantic talking. And I was standing there watching her because I was excited to have pudding. I was hoping she was gonna let me like lick the spoon, you know?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden she goes and drops it and it smashes all to the ground. And she goes, Papa is dead. And yeah, she said that. And like literally 5-10 seconds later, my Uncle Terry comes out and he goes, we just lost Papa.
Yeah.
Like she knew. I watched it. Oh my God, I just got chills. Like that is one of the most formative memories I have of her dropping that, gasping, exclaiming, Papa's gone, and then my uncle coming out and saying it just moments later.
Uh-huh.
And it scared me. And she had those experiences a lot, and then I would watch that happen. But then when I would have experiences like that, she would tell me it was just my imagination. So it was very confusing, right?
And
because growing up, like clearly I had a very traumatic childhood, like really traumatic childhood. And I know everybody has some level of trauma. But honestly, like when I think back to the things, it doesn't even feel like I experienced it. It feels like I watched someone else. It's not really me, because that's how my brain protects me, right? But, you know, my dad was arrested for murder when I was on my birthday. I was 2. It's like my first memory. I had to be around that environment my entire childhood up until 12. And in the meantime, there was sexual abuse. There was physical abuse. There was being put into foster care. There was being put into group homes. There was having abusive partners. There was all kinds of things going on. And then being kicked out ultimately at 12 and being homeless on the street, right? So a lot of things happened, and it's amazing I'm here to talk about it. But I don't like to admit, and I am a doctor. And I became a doctor out of spite, okay?
Out of spite.
For all you that said I couldn't do it. Yeah. For reals. That's literally how it started. But then it became an intrinsically motivated thing over time. Yeah. But and also my last name. Like, I had to be a doctor.
Yeah.
Dr. Stone, like what?
Yeah, it's a cool name.
Sorry. I know it's vain.
That's why I didn't make you take my last name. It was like, it's... yours is too cool.
I mean, you know, I totally would hyphenate it. I could still be Dr. Stone. But anyhow, this is one of those things where I like had to find a way to take all that stuff that happened, shove it down, suppress it, and go forward. Otherwise, what was the other option, right? So what that causes when people do that, though, when they suppress it and they pretend it didn't happen, or they use it as a badge of honor, like I, because that's what I did. I was like, look, I lived on my own since I was 12, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm badass. Yeah, but like, not supposed to happen. Was not a fair thing, right? What happens is crazy psychic phenomenon will surround your life all the time. Like, when I was suppressing all of the trauma that happened and just ignoring it and saying things like, they did the best they could, and, you know, like that, you know, sugarcoating it. I lived in a haunted house my entire life until I stopped doing that. And then now I don't live in haunted houses anymore. And at some point, someone said to me, I think I was like 30, and someone said, I don't think it's the house, Anna. Like, I think it's you.
Yeah.
And I remember looking at my friend, and her name is Teresa. And I said, don't say the, like, when she said that to me, I got cold. Like, I know she was joking. Mm-hmm. She was kind of half joking. But when she said it, it hit something in me where I realized in that moment that it was absolutely the truth, that it was not ghosts, that it was not demons. It was me. Like, mm-hmm. it was my psychic energy just too much, you know, too much because it was pent up, right? Like the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde thing. Yeah. It's like that. And that's what happens when you have trauma and you don't resolve it. And it's hard to resolve it, but you'll end up having a lot of weird things happening, things breaking, things moving around your house, psychokinesis, mm-hmm. Telekinesis, things like this. I mean, there were so many times when things in my house would go missing that I never found. Like, I mean, crazy, weird stuff going on. Windows opening, closing, doors opening, closing, breaking glass, breaking light bulbs, computers breaking all the time, shorting out, watches shorting out, like a lot of things. But then in my research for this episode, I discovered a whole new can of worms about this stuff that I had no idea about prior to today. And I'm really, I don't know how to feel about it.
Yeah.
But I found out that on top of the genetic changes that trauma causes, it also causes heart problems. Your heart is the center of your electromagnetic energy.
Yeah.
It is the organ that produces the most EMF of your body. And so the auric field that it produces is a torus shape, right? So the, the donut, right?
Yeah.
The tree, the, you know, yeah. all of the things, our universe, the same shape, allegedly.
Allegedly. If you believe
if it's
in,
really there. No,
if it's
kidding.
There. If NASA isn't lying to
NASA
us about
is
that.
NASA is liars. They're liars. Yeah. They're such liars. But this is fascinating to me because I had came across a couple studies about magnetite crystals in the brain for people with PTSD and how magnetite serves as a radio amplifier. Right. And so if that's true and people with trauma, because they've raised different neurotransmitters that are activated and coursing through your system when you're in high stress situations, if that somehow synthesizes and metabolizes into magnetite crystals, I could see how then, okay, so maybe that is why I can hear things or know things because I'm like an antenna, like literally.
Well, yeah. And this is when you brought that up. I pointed out something really, really interesting and fascinating.
You did.
Because this is one of the slept on things. Only true alchemists would know this, right? So Quicksilver is the dum-dum. That's the alchemist that kills themselves. They're using Quicksilver with mercury. The Arabs, they say, yes, mercury rules over Quicksilver, over cinnabar, but magnetite. Magnetite is mercury. And like, I mean, look at a sigil. It looks like a transmitter, right? What is mercury? It goes between the gods and humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of this, mercury and the alchemical process is that which brings together the salt and the sulfur, right?
Right.
Yeah. So mercury is the kind of like binding force between the unseen realm in the human realm, and it's the missing key component that yeah. you know, the alchemists are, they're trying to utilize it in order to bring these two fields together,
right? And yeah. Now there are therapeutic modalities of electromagnetic treatment for yeah. people with trauma, anxiety, and PTSD because it interacts with those crystals in the brain and helps to change the way they're thinking.
Yeah.
Which is wild. I didn't even know about that. But yeah. I learned that the heart's magnetic field is 5,000 times stronger than that of the brain and can be detected several feet away from the body. This field is not just a byproduct of the heart's electrical activity. It's an integral to the body's energy systems, influencing other organs and interacting with the environment outside. And it's believed to play a key role in communication within the body, right?
Yeah.
Particularly between the heart and the brain. This bidirectional communication is crucial for regulating physiological processes, but it also extends to emotional and cognitive functions, affecting how we perceive things and how we behave. So if that's true, the studies have shown is that people with trauma have a higher amount of magnetic energy.
Yeah.
Right? Literally, by a lot. So that's why they have heart disease, because that's such a stressor on the heart.
Yeah.
This also is prevalent in people that are channeling, have ability to channel or mediumship abilities.
Yes.
So that's what the study is about. It's about mediumship and the toll it takes on the body physically. And it's not good.
Yeah. Well, it, and then it's something that we pointed out in the previous episode, mm-hmm. that shaman who do soul retrievals, they shaman have a shorter life expectancy because of the type of work that they do, where they're constantly going back and
forth.
Well,
now we know. So because it's saying here that the channeling involves tuning into higher frequencies. So that's a stress on the body, because our programming is for the frequencies here, right? And it also causes arrhythmias, it causes palpitations and other cardiovascular conditions.
Yeah.
So almost everybody that was studied that has, or, you know, self-reported mediumship abilities has a heart problem.
Yeah.
And I'm like, great, you know, but it also makes sense because the things breaking, like the energy bursts that happen in the house, like the poltergeist activity that, you know, so to speak, makes sense. If we have, if it's 5,000 times stronger than the brain and it's detectable outside the body in a normal person, and it's much higher in somebody with trauma, then there's your poltergeist right there.
It's like an EMF gun.
Yeah. And I have said, have you not heard me say, there are times where I get so like focused on something I'm doing, I feel like I could zap people with my hands. Like I could just point and like literally have like electricity come out. I swear to God, that, like I literally feel like that sometimes. And I'm not just saying that metaphorically. It feels like I have so much energy. And then also I'll get body twitches. Like I feel it building up and then it just has to like, I just jerk. You know how I have those weird jerks sometimes? And there's no neurological issue for them. Like that's been checked. So, you know, that it makes sense to me here. So, and the reason that we're talking about this tonight, you guys, is because, you know, we understand that like a lot of the people in the comments have been saying, you know, some of the stuff that we say hits a nerve with them. Like, oh, they're hearing it for the first time coming out of someone else's mouth. And we both know what that's like to get that validation.
We've been getting emails from, listeners and viewers basically reaching out because we said something that they resonated with or whatever. And one of the big things we wanted to do with this podcast is like most occult podcasts are just like information dumps or scholarly or people dorking out and nerding out and that kind of stuff.
And we do that.
And I love that. I absolutely love that. But we both feel that it's important that there is also kind of like more casual, experience-based, practitioner-based kind of thing, because we're very lucky that we have each other to validate each other's experiences.
Or to question, or to like bring ground us.
Or to question each other. Yeah, you know.
He's always telling me I'm off my rocker. Yeah, but
you get on me when I get all obsessive and manic and stuff. Not so really.
But
the validation is important because of the quote-unquote occult silence. A lot of times we don't know what our peers, even our close friends in this, what their experiences are like too. And it's a really interesting thing that when we open up about certain experiences and parts of our practice, then it resonates with us. And we kind of find it uncovers more of the puzzle. And one of the things that I was like, I've always been taught in like spiritual practice, like based in religious practice, and I've brought it with me into the occult, because I don't know anybody in the occult that says this, is that you look for the similarities and not the differences, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's really been one of my greatest tools in the occult. It's why, you know, I don't, it's why I look for the similar things in Christianity. I look for the similar things in the New Age. I don't look for the differences, because I'm able to extract the truth out of it that way.
Because it's all piecemealed out. Like it's every different belief system has some of it.
And our experiences are really, really similar.
Yes.
Like I've been so fortunate to know so many different magicians and occultists, and then you've exposed me to like mediums and witches, and it's been really validating, and it's really helped me on my path to be able to hear other people's experiences for them to open up to me.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I it makes me very happy when I put myself out there, like, because I do have a professional image, right? Yes. I am a professor. You know, I'm full time out of college, and you know, at this point in my life, at my age, I really don't care what other people think about me or if they think I'm full of it. I don't care. I'm not out to try to convince anybody of anything. I'm just simply talking about what I went through for very selfish reasons. I'll say that sometimes I just need to say it out loud to be able to understand it myself. And then also, like, our dialogue back and forth triggers things, right? Also, and you'll find that's true when you start to talk about, when you find somebody safe to talk about it with, a lot of the times that will lead to more understanding.
It propels you in a massive way.
Yeah. I mean, and so, I mean, I went into all of my study for very selfish reasons. Mm. I decided I was going to study psychology because I needed to understand myself. What the hell was wrong with me? Like, why do I have these issues? Like, why do I have hauntings? Why do I have these cycles that repeat and repeat and repeat? You know, so a good measure of whether or not your trauma from before, despite you thinking it's not affecting you now, because if you're anything like me, you're like, that happened when I was a kid. I'm an adult now. It doesn't bother me, right?
Yeah.
Wrong, unfortunately. How you can tell if it is still has a hold on you is one of the biggest signs is that you have a repeating issue over and over with different people, but the same exact situation. Like different characters, different scene, same outcome. You know, so whether that's a toxic relationships that you keep getting into, whether that's the inability to keep a steady job, whether it is having emotional instability or just, you know, a chaotic life in general, no matter how hard you try, that is a sign that there's something unresolved from the past that is hindering your growth. And I can say that with almost 100% certainty, because when we have trauma from before, especially when we're little, again, especially at the hands of people that were supposed to care about us and love us, we have problems with self-worth and achieving success because it doesn't feel right, because we are told negative things and we adopt those belief systems as our own. So we start to, you know, find ways to self-sabotage. You know, when things start going good, we'll do something stupid to make it bad. Mm-hmm. Because bad is what we're familiar with. You know, as much as we hate it and we don't want to deal with it, we keep dealing with it because we're putting ourselves back in that situation.
I heard some dumb little self-help platitude that like really rung with me that what? I ended up writing it down. It was like when your success is more than you're programmed for, you sabotage.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I, well, oh my and, God, I, and I was like, perfect. I was like, I love that.
No, it's that's right absolutely now. True.
Yeah.
So, or, you know, say you are used to having toxic, or you equate drama with love, right?
Oh,
that's
yes,
really yeah, common, yeah. Especially for us ladies. We like to think that the guy that is chasing us and incessantly calling us and wanting to know where we are and, you know, being super controlling is love.
That's so nuts.
It is.
That is so nuts.
But that is not what it is at all. And then when you get a healthy relationship, that you're like,
I could never pull that off. How did those guys get girlfriends? Because if I was like obsessive stalker dude, I would never get a girlfriend.
Girls
ever.
Love that. What are you talking about? No, we don't, but we do because we're sick.
I feel like, you know, yeah.
It's sickness. Because, you know, but I mean, what I'm talking about there is like the constant fighting, breaking up, getting back together, the toxic cheating on each other, you know, like the whole, you know, the whole drama of it all, you know, after a certain age. And I'd say that age would be about high school.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
That's when it's, working for me. I think I went through one of those relationships in high school.
Yep.
And then that never worked again. Yep. I was just like,
it is a problem. It is a problem that should stay in high school. Like that is your training ground. And that is where you're supposed to get that out of your system.
Yeah,
and stop the nonsense exactly. and go forward and like find a partner, because the psychological assessment for whether or not you're a successful individual is very well defined throughout our culture. And you can agree or disagree, but it is facts. Like that there's a trajectory that an average healthy person goes on. Uh-huh. And it is, you know, school and then finding a mate or getting a career, finding a partner, having a family, set all those things, right? And that to people with trauma, that seems stupid.
Yeah.
That seems dumb. Why do I want that? I don't want that. That's dumb. I don't want to be confined. I don't want to be tied down. I don't want to be trapped, et cetera. Like these are things I said up until very recently, and I meant them 100% because it didn't.
Those are symbols of something that's deeper, right?
Yes.
Those are symbols of something that's incredibly deeper. Like, where's the family symbol? It's a symbol of love.
Love and stability. And
what is the house a symbol of? It's shelter.
Safety.
And stability.
Mm-hmm.
And what is the career supposed to be a symbol of? It's supposed to be a symbol of purpose, right? Yeah,
purpose. But, being able to afford your life, like just to be able to live comfortably.
A job is to pay your bills. Being met. A career is like, you know, this is what I'm doing with my life. Obviously that gets really muddy. But I think, you know, we're talking a lot about this, but I want to know, as an occultist, as a magical practitioner, what does all this trauma medium stuff mean
tell you.
For me?
Okay. It's super easy.
Well, we'll do it after the break.
Oh, is it already 45 minutes?
Yes.
Wow.
Okay. We'll be right back, guys.
Oh, shit. Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're back from our break. And so I guess we're coming back and we're going to be talking about, you know, what does all this mean? What is the mediumship? What is the trauma? What does it mean for somebody that is practicing magic, practicing the occult? Maybe they're a medium themselves, or maybe they want to work with a medium. But what does this mean for us? How is this relevant?
Okay, so it's relevant in the fact that if you are into the occult and you actually are practicing or called to practice, then I can almost guarantee that you are in some way, shape, or form some level of intuitive or psychic, and likely you have trauma. That is very prevalent. And 97.5% of people with psychic abilities or inclinations have experienced moderate to severe trauma in their life. That's insane. That is one of the highest statistical correlations I've ever come across in research. That's almost 100%, you know? So the thing is that if you're doing magic and you have unresolved trauma, you're not at your best. You're not functioning at your highest capacity, because there is a hindrance that's still weighing on you. So, but luckily, magic is literally one of the best ways to help you get past these things, right? And help you to to transmute the negative experiences that you've had into something positive. And, you know, it's literal alchemy, right?
Yeah.
So when you have unresolved trauma, you can do things. You can have things happen. Probably a lot of you know, I mean, when I say if you say it, it'll happen, like speak things into existence. I think it's probably because of that extra energy that we've got going on or something. But the problem is that a lot of time it's negative because we have the negative.
It's chaotic.
Yes. So imagine what you can do now, but if it was focused properly.
Yeah.
You know, it would be, I mean, I know because I've done it, right? We got this house that way. Like we have done, I've all the things I've asked for since I really worked on this with my own trauma background and working that out to the point where I wasn't having the same problems anymore. My magic has been off the chain. 100%.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
And so that threshold though, we mm-hmm. have a word for it in magic. We call it initiation, right?
Yes. Yeah. We do. And it is exactly that. If you are able to see it for what it is.
Yeah. So not everything is, you know, not everything is an initiation. No. Bad things do happen. But I think one of the most important things and one of the most important features of an initiation is that it has to be, there has to be a spiritual experience tied to
yes.
it, whether it's an interface or contact with a deity, with spirits, or it's some kind of spiritual awakening or something, an yep. initiation. At its core, there is a spiritual experience tied to it.
Yes.
And initiations are something that we go into intentionally, right?
Well, no, not always. So for, I think that a lot of, I'm not sure I could say that in my experience, no, but after knowing you and hearing your stories about things that have happened, it does seem like that perhaps maybe men are more inclined to seek out the initiation than women, it just happens to. But yeah. I don't know if that's truly the case. I don't have enough data.
So I think one of the big, that when I was in ceremonial magic and I was obsessed with magical orders and lodges and that kind of thing, one of the things that happens and that disillusioned me with the lodges is that the initiations were degrees and titles.
Yeah.
And they weren't providing me what I was seeking, what I was looking for. I remember one very disturbing conversation I had with a Golden Dawn adept that it was somebody that was in my order, and they said something along the lines of, yeah, but we were talking about spirits, and they're like, yeah, but they're not real. And I was kind of horrified that this person that was degrees ahead of me and had been practicing for 8 years hadn't ever had an interaction with a spirit oh. that had convinced yeah. him that they were actual, real, external things.
Well, yeah.
And so mm-hmm. the lodge initiations and those degrees, is that sometimes they do provide the experience, the ceremonies, but more often than not, they don't. More often than not, it is a psychodrama. It is a cult theater.
Yes.
It is. And then the initiation, it is not giving you that experience. And so while I was initiated into many orders, in retrospect, I don't consider myself an initiate until I went independent. Mm-hmm. I formed my own group, and our entire goal with this group was every single person in the group, we were going to be initiated authentically, and we weren't getting an initiation from a body master or somebody in charge of an order or an organized group. We were getting an initiation from a deity itself, and that's when it finally yeah. took. That's when the people in that group, we went through a real initiation together to where, you know, it was the death, resurrection, rebirth initiation, right. the one that is at the core of the mystery schools that mm-hmm. you see in the shamanic, in the yep. tribal initiations. And that was the one when I crossed that threshold, that was the one where, like you were just saying about your magic, my magic, that's when reality turned into a playground. But it was yeah. a very intense experience. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that is true. I have never felt like, and you know, people will say I'm being really rude here, but I've never thought that other people held the keys for me ever.
Yeah.
I don't believe that. I don't believe that somebody else has the power to initiate somebody else. I feel like they might be able to walk you through a process, but it's done internally. It's done. You have to experience it. And a lot of the people that are in orders, their proof of life for magic is nil. Like, it's not there.
Yeah.
In comparison to the stuff I've personally experienced. Like, I've had similar experiences where I talk to people that are allegedly like years past me. I mean, not anymore, because I'm like pretty much the oldest person I know. But like, there's people that had been practicing when I was younger anyways for a lot longer than me. And when I would tell them about things that happened, they look at me like I was crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, what? Like, you know, so I know that feeling is very disillusioning. It is, because you're like, wait a minute.
Well, it disturbed me because of my my spiritual psychosis when I was able to see, like, I had, around that same time I had had an out of body experience, like an actual one. It wasn't a dream, you know?
Yeah.
And, I went through that psychosis where I could see, you know, this eldritch thing or whatever. Yeah. But I'd had these, interactions with spirits before, when I first got into the occult, I started, in the Ars Goetia, and that, made me believe in the reality of spirits really quickly, because they can, those things, if you don't know what you're doing, they will, you know, they'll physically hurt you.
Yeah.
They'll physically harm you.
That's, I don't ever want to deal with that. I actually have. So I actually have, and I don't ever want that to happen again. I wasn't physically harmed, but I had physical manifestations that can't be explained. So no thanks. But I've witnessed it.
Yeah.
And for somebody else to say that they can initiate me that hasn't witnessed it, no.
Well, yeah. And so I remember that conversation was like really disturbing for me, because I realized, because I'd sunk a lot of time and a lot of years into the Golden Dawn, and I realized, I was like, what am I doing here?
Yeah.
You know, I was like, this, I'm not going to be able to get what I'm looking for out of this, because my magic was still weak. My life was still chaotic.
Yeah.
My brain was still messy, like all that kind of stuff. I was still unhappy, you know, like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I had to go out and I had to, like, I just gave myself to Isis and asked her to initiate me with a small group of people that were looking for the same thing. And she showed us, you know, and we didn't know what we were doing.
We don't know until you know.
We didn't know that we were about to be traumatized.
Yeah. Well, besides that part, besides the trauma part.
Yeah.
Okay. No one can tell you what it's going to be like, because it's going to be unique for you, what you need.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So an initiation, traditionally speaking, within a shamanic culture or indigenous culture, is going to be something that is, you know, either force, like as it is a purposeful traumatizing. Like it's one tribe that buries the initiate underground in like a coffin for 7 days with a straw to breathe through.
Yeah.
That's it. That what? Like, absolutely not. You know, no thanks. That sounds no. But that trauma of isolation and claustrophobia and like, oh God, and not being able to breathe. I can't imagine. You can't come out of that not changed, right?
Yeah.
But that is to break the person open, right?
Yes.
So that's the point, is to like break the psyche of all of the norms that it's already been indoctrinated into, to, you know, be able to access those ancestral, because in those tribes it's ancestral, right?
Yeah.
Realms or spirit realms. But it happens to us all the time, and a lot of us don't see it for what it is. And it's very possible that it could be because the person's not supposed to see it. I do think that there is I should have printed it out so I had the quote, but there was a article I came across that said exactly what I say about people with psychic abilities, like how common it is.
Abilities.
This person in their article was talking about how a lot of the new age people or whatever, like the newer kind of a threat of occult practices, like everybody's psychic or in it. And it's like, that's like saying everybody can see or everybody can hear, which is clearly not true. It is, you know, some people have maybe varying degrees of it, but there is a threshold, right? For the majority of people get gut feelings. You know, everybody says that I had a gut feeling, like that's very common. There's a difference between people that are actually truly psychic compared to people that have intuition ability, you know, intuitive abilities, right? I really resonated with the way that this person put it, but it was saying, you know, that there's some people, it's like to say that everybody can do it is discrediting not just the person, like people that actually can do it, but the evolution of the soul and the path that it's on currently. So not everybody's in the same spot, you know. Some of us are, you know, older souls. Some of us are newer souls. Some of us are more evolved. Some of us are less evolved. So it, you know, makes sense that some of us would have heightened abilities based on those things compared to others, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I've always felt that way. I've always felt like, no, not everybody is, maybe everyone has a capacity for it, but they're not doing it, you know, or they're not aware of how to use it. You know, if I want to be generous here. So, you know, that to me resonated. And I think it's true. There's some people like you might have an initiation occur and it just, you know, maybe there's steps that happened in the past that you didn't go down the certain path. And so you're not where you need to be to experience it as an initiation. Again, sometimes things just happen randomly and it's not that, but there are hallmarks of an initiation. The spiritual component of it is there, but I think besides that huge part that is a requirement, the other thing that's really important is what happens after, right? Like, what do you do after this catastrophe trauma has occurred? Do you change your behavior and start doing things differently? Do you learn from it? Do you like take the benefit of it and, you know, move with that? Or do you focus on the negatives of it?
So in order for me to consider it an initiation, it has to remove the filter. So the thing is, if the filter is removed, then there is no question of what you should be doing. It's like the filter's removed. You now have a connection to deity and spirits. And what's the question there? It's like, well, what's the next step? You just take the next dedicated step. You just follow this thing that you've just been connected to.
But the problem therein lies here's the problem. That is true. You have a moments of, oh my gosh, I see it. I know now, right? But those fade. They do, because life comes back into play. The physical material world that we live in takes over because it is impossible to escape. We have deadlines, we have bills, we have kids, we have jobs, relationships, etc. There's all of these mundane things that come into play. And over time, that knowing that you had from that initiation gets degraded and it becomes fuzzy. And it's not until the next occurrence, because guess what? Initiations are not a one-off. They are constant. They're always happening. If you're doing it right, if you're evolving, because it's part of the refinement, right? You have a major... Typically, I think that a lot of people have like one major, like major huge thing happen. And then from there, hopefully, it's less degree of that, but still something significant, but not as traumatic as the first one, you know?
So I think the very first one is the most important one. And that's the one that's in that the shamanic tribes, like the Aborigines, the African tribes, it's on every single continent.
It is.
It's a severe trauma that's supposed to be a breakdown. Sometimes it's physical. A lot of time, like most of the time, it's always got a mental, psychological breaking down a part of it. But in the tribal cultures, they'll have a physical part of it too. You know, circumcision has been tied into it. There was one tribe that was, the men were slitting down there so that they could become an androgen. They could have the powers of women. But there's like psychological, physical, and this is the death. This is the dismemberment. And and you see it in the story of Dionysus. You see it in the story of Osiris. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. You can see in these highly organized religions, still at their core is this tribal practice of death and then the resurrection and rebirth that happens into it, right? And that's the threshold. That's the first initiation. And that's the one that opens you up to, like, that's when your magic gets powerful. That's when you gain your sight and your ability to hear. That's when deity and spirits answer your call every single time.
Yeah.
That's when they see you and that's when you really have authority over the spirits, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And from there, yes, you continue to initiate deeper and deeper and deeper. And those ones are more like ripping away little fragments of and so I call it the dross, and that's what you're scraping off the top of the So you're scraping off the dross, and this happens during the putrefaction, and the putrefaction is the death. You know, that's when you're taking a slow heat and you're
boiling down everything.
You're boiling it and it's turning black and it's burning. And the dross is floating to the top of the flask, and then you're supposed to scrape the dross off. And so in those further initiations after your first one, you're removing the dross, right?
Yeah.
Because you're not an enlightened being when you come out the other side of your first initiation.
Oh, you're like broken.
You're just now aware. You're aware now.
And
you're like,
crazy.
Oh, I have a lot of work to do. So I don't think like going through an initiation, like you have the spiritual framework. Now you're aware and you have sight and you can hear. And then so like to me, there should be no question of like, what do I do? It's like, oh, well, there's work to be done. I have, you know, these things to refine.
Definitely that. But then over time, it's just like that memory kind of fades and you're like, did that really happen? Did it really go down that way? So writing about it is really important when you have those experiences. And most of the time in the midst of them, you don't really, it's hard to see it for what it is. It's only typically like towards the end or after, even sometimes, or even far after, that you can look back and go, oh, yeah, that's why that was happening. You know, it makes sense now. Hindsight being 2020, right? But this is something that I think anybody that is into magic and the occult is going to go through. And being prepared for it and knowing how to handle it is important. I wish someone had told me. Nobody did.
Yeah.
And that's why we're talking about it, because if you're really trying to get yourself aligned properly with your spiritual practice so that you can actually, you know, get results from your magic, then you do need to refine yourself, your core. And also sometimes schools of thought here say that it is a soul contract, that the trauma you experience is something you signed up for ahead of time. I don't know about that. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's not something I experienced when I died. I didn't experience anything about that. Like, I didn't get any information on that. I got information on a lot of things. I did not get information on that being the case. But that is, for some reason, widely held belief. So I'm not sure why, you know. I can't speak to it other than I didn't see it or know about it. But I did know about the collective unconscious. I did see that. I did see a lot of other things that I was surprised to see or to know about. But that wasn't one of them. Just like ghosts wasn't one of them either, which really bothered me.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, I mean, then that's a near-death experience is an initiation for days.
Yeah.
I'll tell you.
So
traumatizing.
Yeah. So I think we're going to call it.
Yeah,
you know,
our camera's acting very crazy.
Yeah, lots of technical difficulties on this episode.
I wonder why.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. But anyways, thank you guys for joining us. We will see you next week.
Yeah, let us know your trauma. Like, you know, what happened to you?
Your trauma initiation.
Let me know your trauma. Yeah. It makes me feel better about myself. Okay. Just kidding. No, seriously. But if you have any questions, you need help with any shadow work stuff, feel free to leave a post and we can help you out, you know?
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Night.
You've been listening to Discourse, where we venture into the mysteries of esotericism, the occult, and the depths of spiritual exploration. I am Abimon the Great, joined as always by Dr. Anna Stone, bringing adept insights to help guide your journey. Remember, the path of wisdom is illuminated by both knowledge and experience. Until next time, continue your exploration and stay attuned to the unseen.